Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Here's the beginning of part two. The title of part two is called Powerful PR Techniques Your Wallet Will Love. Robert doesn't play around with publicity. If he's trying to get a client in a newspaper and none of his free techniques are working, he'll pay for a spot. It's one of his biggest secrets, but he gets his spots for under $100. Always. Readers have no clue it's not an actual article either, because Robert makes it look like one on a quarter page. And in part two of this audio interview, you'll hear how he creates his articles and how he gets that amazing rate. You'll also learn how he runs a 30-minute cable production in any market for around $60, and how he finds a target list of media contacts, names, numbers, and specialties for just $5. But that's not all. And in part two, he reveals the kinds of insider tricks and techniques that save you time, frustration, tons of money, and more. He'll also share with you the story about the joint venture he struck up with Federal Express that illustrates perfectly just how effective piggybacking can be. You'll hear the one thing you can do with every joint venture that'll make your deals so sweet they're hard to say no to. You'll learn why you need to stop that outdated PR technique of press releases and pitching, and how Robert molds stories around his clients instead. You'll hear about the video Robert watches every day on YouTube that helps him create and reinforce his mindset for success, and why that's so important. You'll hear the little story about how Robert earned $1 million from one client alone. You'll hear about the only old-school PR tactic that's still fresh and effective today. You'll hear about the no-sweat, no-brainer PR technique you'll want to use for every seminar or book release, movie opening, product launch, and more. You'll also learn about the art of co-op mailing. If you run yours like Robert does, you can send your next mailing out for free. Robert didn't learn public relations in college, which is probably why his techniques aren't bogged down with theory. He learned PR right in the trenches, first creating it for his own company and then expanding it to help others. He saw the power J. Abraham was creating for his reverse engineering techniques, and he applied them to PR for amazing results that are always stacked in his favor. And in this audio interview, you'll hear how to get those kinds of results starting today. Now let's get going. So how did you get into speaking with all these other guys? Did they invite you or did you solicit?
Some were invited. And if you think about the people I've done PR for, Les Brown, Jay Abraham, Laurel, Chet Holmes, Jay Levinson, Bill Bartman, Joel Kahn, Mike Kane, they're speakers anyway. So they're doing their own events. It was almost like when you do PR for a speaker.
You're the PR guy. They'll bring you on as an expert.
Exactly. So I got on their stage, and then I started doing my own seminars. I do my own boot camps. You know, at the same time, I also reach out to people that I don't know that do seminars in entirely different industries to keep it fresh and new.
All right, Chet Holmes, he's paying you $1,000 a month. It's not a ton of money, and you're just building your credibility, and that's fine. But all these other guys, Mike Kanings, Joel Kahn, Laurel Langbar, Bill Bartman, what kind of money were you making with these guys? What kind of contracts or agreements did you make? Were you formulating that now that you're kind of getting up there with the big dogs?
Yeah, those were multi-$1,000 a month retainers, and it varied $2,000 to $6,000 a month, depending on the project. Many were doing book launches, and they wanted their book to hit the bestsellers list. So, like I said, it was more than what Chet paid, but it was no one-set-fee to everybody.
Okay, so it's something that just occurred to me. When they hire you for PR, it is around an event. It could be a seminar. It could be a book launch. It could be a movie. Are there clients out there who are looking for PR people to stay on year-round who will pay you ongoing retainers just to work on whatever they have, or is it usually centered around an event?
No, I have both. I would say it's probably an easier sell if there's a project, if there's a movie release, if there's a book coming out, if there's an event, because they want that to be a success. So it's probably an easier conversation. But I do have clients there at a certain level, and the best way I can put it is they're tired of being the best-kept secret in their industry, and they know what they're missing is the PR. They've been doing this. They're the best. It's just they're the best-kept secret, and they were tired of it. So those were the ones where they didn't necessarily need a project or event to hire me.
So Bill Bartman, was that when he was promoting his seminars on the collection industry?
No, this was before that. See, he comes from a different world where he understands the value of PR, and he'll echo what I said. It's almost like the easiest business you can get when someone reads about you in the USA Today or in Forbes.
Oh, his PR stuff on his site is out of this world.
That's what I'm saying. So he understood. He didn't need an event. He was just like, look, I need to be in Business Week. I need to be in Forbes. I need to be on CNN or Fox News or whatever you can get. So he's probably not a fair case study to use because he got it before he even hired me. He's a billionaire, so he knows the power. People that are new to this space that really don't understand the power of it, and then they do their first interview, they get their first write-up, and they see how the traffic shoots through the roof on their site, the phone calls they get. I still get phone calls from the CNBC site that came out almost, 2 weeks ago.
Tell us about that CNBC deal. Explain what happened, what it is, what it did for you.
It was just a reporter that I had a relationship with over the years, and she was profiling how to make $1 million in a year as a solo entrepreneur without having a huge staff and building and all this other stuff. And so I sent her my story, and I said I have three outsourcers. If you hire me today, the actual legwork of calling the radio stations and TV and magazines and the Oprahs of the world, I have people now who do that. I give the strategy and the direction, but I don't do that as much. So they're outsourced.
You keep in the U.S., the outsourcers, or international?
One's U.S. and the other two are in the Philippines. So that was the premise of that story, was it could be done. You don't need a lot of startup capital. You don't need a big staff. And she really loved the joint venture aspect, and she highlighted it, too, in that CNBC piece, is because I grew exponentially partnering with other people, and they raised my profile. If you get endorsed with a big company and they introduce you to their clients, again, depending on how big the client base is, that can be a game changer.
So the story was a televised story on CNBC?
No, it was for the website. And she didn't tell the story I wanted her to share, because kind of like you, she was just fascinated with the joint ventures and wanted to know. I did a joint venture with FedEx, and what I wanted to do with FedEx was I wanted to give away a brochure or a tip sheet with every business delivery. So every time FedEx went to a business and dropped off a package or an envelope, I wanted my ride-along, a flyer or a sales sheet. At the time, it was selling my CD. So FedEx is headquartered in Memphis. I spent years going around in circles trying to get the marketing department and operations. I don't know who to talk to. Then I decided, let me do the regional hubs, because there's one here. Let me see if I can get them to do it. And so I ended up striking the deal with just the regional FedEx hub, and they delivered 4,000 packages a day to small businesses, not residents, because, like I said, the soccer mom, she's not ordering stuff on PR. So I was like, don't even give it to residents, just when they do business deliveries. And then I gave them 50% of the sale. I was selling the CDs for $97, and I gave them $50 for each sale. And this is the deal I struck with the local FedEx.
They didn't have to get it approved with corporate?
No, just the general manager of the hub.
Nice. So every time they delivered a package regionally, they would drop off on the package or give to the receiver of the package your brochure, or was it an envelope? Was it a flyer? What was it?
It was a flyer.
And did it have FedEx's logo on it?
No. The FedEx driver handed it to him. Or if he sent the package in front of the office door, it was sitting on top of that. They knew it came from FedEx, and he handed it to them together.
So how many got distributed?
Well, they did 4,000 packages a day. You know, human error and not everybody doing it. I couldn't say maybe 20%.
Did you get any sales from it?
Yeah, I got sales. I did that for 2 years, and then the general manager took a job somewhere else.
Who paid for the printing?
I paid for printing. Anytime you do JVs, you want to do the heavy lifting. If you have to talk people into paying money up front, paying for printing, paying for this, paying for that, it's going to make your road that much tougher. I come in and say, I got everything covered. I just need access to your list. I'll pay for printing. I'll send everything. We'll set it up. I'll even take your mailing list and do the emails. I had some people do that. They were like, here's the list of our customers. You plug them into your system, and you market to them. I've got a couple of those deals going. I got some that protect their list. I'm not giving you my list. You give me what you want sent, and I'll send it out. So it's whatever you can negotiate.
Generally, when you're talking to your clients and you have the intel on their mailing list, do you see that most of these big dogs and these clients are way underusing their email lists?
The top dogs, the cream of the cream, they aren't. You know, there's no way they're making $5, $10 million a year not really utilizing their list. And you know who they are. We just named a bunch of them. Those guys get it. It's the ones that's kind of in between, and they're doing okay. They have somewhat of a brand, but they're not on Tony Robbins level. They're not Jack Canfield yet. Those are the ones where you can see where they can escalate it a little more.
Out of all these clients you've had, who are you most impressed with? Who would you just say is just unbelievable business savvy that really stood out?
That's like a dual-edged sword. I got to say Chet Holmes because he was the first one to give me my break. So he always had a special place with me just because he gave me my shot. These doors wouldn't have opened if it wasn't for him.
Were you aware that he was sick?
Yeah. I did PR for Chet since that seminar.
Passed away?
He passed. That year he passed, I was doing PR for he and Tony Robbins as a company, Business Breakthroughs. I did PR for them right up until he passed.
I know he got sick very fast, but was he still out in the field hustling until he just absolutely couldn't?
Not as much. He would do a speaking engagement here and there. It had to be something big. The last time I actually was on stage with him, it was he and Tony Robbins did an event in Vegas. It was $20,000 a person. That was the last time I was on stage with him. After that, it was a rare event that he did. He had got to the point where he had made his company 100% virtual, where he pretty much checked emails. He had a president, he had an operations guy, he had a sales manager, he had a person in charge of advertising. Obviously, I did the PR. He really set his business up to where it was 100% virtual. He just overlooked and oversaw everything. And it's funny because he has another company, and that's all they do for companies now, is set you up to be virtual and, you know, how to set up those systems where you don't have to be there.
Was he married with children or was he a single guy?
No, he's married. I think he and Vicky were married probably 25 years. They got two kids. They're in college. One's a singer. I did PR for her first album. Yeah, I just did PR for her, for his company. I think she had a video nominated, some kind of awards. We did the PR for that.
So his companies, they're still rolling along.
Oh, yeah, because the way he set it up. And then the other answer, of course, Jay Abraham is on that list because what he taught me was there are so many aspects to business and making money that you don't see. He can literally find 1,001 ways to make money, to find how to optimize something. And once your brain is turned on to that, and I'm nowhere near him. I'm probably 15% of what he is. I see what it's done for me, but again, he's been in business 40 years, and I turned 40 in March. So, you know, I grade on the curve a little bit.
Yeah, you're young. You still got time.
But the latest guru now is a guy named Dan Pena.
Dan Pena, yeah. Are you doing PR for him?
No, I'm trying. I'm working on him.
Oh, he's like a tough, crazy man.
See, and this is just where I am in business. That's what I need. I don't need the Jay Abraham, 3 ways to grow a business, 1,001 ways to do this, that. I've already mastered that, and I apply that every day. I've got that. Now it's like, to get to the next level, I know my mindset and everything has to shift. So I think Jay laid the foundation, and you definitely need the foundation. But then Dan Pena is the guy to give me that other part that I'm missing.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Is he still doing the seminars at his castle?
Yeah, he does those. His book, I Finally Got It, Your First 100 Million. But yeah, he's all over YouTube, and you can download his stuff off YouTube and watch it like I do. I watch his video every day, working on my mindset. And the other guy, too, is John Assaroff for The Secret. I did some PR for The Secret. I forgot to mention him. He's good because he talks about the brain and the subconscious. And the reason I was stuck at 6 figures, and if you're at 50,000 or if you're at 1 million, there's a reason why we're there. And then he explains the brain and what the subconscious does and how to reprogram yourself.
Yeah, he's doing well for himself.
You've heard of The Secret, right?
I have.
He's in there, and if you just Google his name. And what got me with him is so funny. It's somewhere along the line, I signed up for his newsletter. And then one day, I'm reading the email, and he and his partner built 17 different million-dollar companies. So they went into 17 different industries, started 17 different businesses, and got them all to $1 million. And so I remember reading his email. I'm like, okay, I think this guy might know a little something. Let me sit in on his teleseminar. And the whole time, he didn't talk marketing strategy. He didn't talk how to close and handle rejection. He talked about your brain. He said we're all hardwired. There's a blueprint. There's a set point for your weight. There's a set point for your money you make. And if you deviate from that, your brain releases chemicals to get you right back down to your comfort zone. And I was blown away. that was another life changer, because at that time I was just bumping up against 100,000, 150, 100,000, 150. And I said, okay, there's something I'm doing that's just keeping me here. So that's when I got into the subconscious and how to reprogram and NLP and law of attraction, you know, all this stuff since then.
So you're impressed with Chet Holmes, Abraham. How about Laura Lingmeyer? She's sharp cookie.
Actually, I did her book launch. She did a couple events. We did PR for her. She was mainly the financial makeover type person.
Have you had her call you back for repeat stuff?
Not her, but in this industry, even with the Fortune 500 companies, McDonald's and Subway and Starbucks, they change PR firms and ad agencies like you change shirts. I don't know what it is, but I have quite a few that will come back a year or two. I think what it is they want to test the waters, and they always have people in their ear, just like when I was in their ear. I'm pretty sure they were working with some PR person, and I've said, okay, well, I can do such and such, and then life happens and things happen and whatever, and then sometimes they come back and say, I'm doing something else. Sometimes they move on. Laurel hasn't rehired me, but I've had Les Brown and Chet and Jay and a lot of others who have. So that's just kind of how it is.
How about these other guys teaching PR out there? I'm sure you've listened to their stuff. Is some of the other teachers and gurus on PR, are they behind the eight ball? Maybe some of it outdated today? What's changed in PR?
I think now you still see the whole press release thing that people are big on. Social media has definitely been incorporated in as far as pitching and going after the media. It's using Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter.
Are you integrating social media?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I use social media.
Have you found that effective?
It's effective as far as reaching who you need to reach. But the thing is, it still comes down to the story or the hook. If it's not anything they want to cover, it doesn't matter how you reach them. Like, if I have a reporter's email address, there's no reason for me to contact her through Facebook. I got her email. It comes down to the story, if it's something they want to cover. If they don't want to cover it, it doesn't matter that I can send out a tweet or find them on LinkedIn. The bottom line is, if it's something that they want to cover. But what set me apart is, I don't approach PR the way anybody else does it, because I didn't come into the game the way they came in. I kind of came in the back door with a direct response mentality, with the marketing mindset. I'm trying to make this easy so I know what story are working on or who they're looking for. The old school way was to try to pitch, okay, we'll do something on this. How about this story? No, I'm find out what you're covering and then plug it into that.
Or you'll find out what they're looking for and you'll mold the story around your client.
Absolutely. One of the things I did too, and I didn't say this, I used to buy leads. There was a company where you could buy leads of businesses looking for a PR firm or an ad agency. They would fill out a form online, a landing page, or click some AdWords or pay-per-click type deal. Anyway, I would buy these leads of companies looking for a PR firm. Do you know how much easier that is to sell than for me to call you out of the blue?
Oh, yeah. So those were money well spent?
Yeah. It was well spent on my end, but I think the company priced it too low, or they had bad management, because then they were bought out or merged with somebody else, and then they changed their whole business structure, their whole business model changed. I used that strategy for 4 or 5 years and easily made $60,000-$70,000 added to my bottom line just from the leads I bought. And they would charge me like $25 a lead or $50 a lead.
Who's the old-time guy teaching PR? What's his name? The guy who sold the
Brooklyn Bridge?
Yeah.
Paul Artuni, and he's the one I referred to earlier that I did my first joint venture with. I just didn't mention his name.
Oh, did you do a JV with Paul?
Yeah, he was the first one.
He's the one. He was selling the products. Okay, great.
Yeah, he was selling a database of media connections, contacts, and then he was selling his workbook on how to get PR, but he wouldn't do it for you.
I understand.
So I'm like, you're leaving money on the table because I can do it for him and then give you half the money.
Yeah, Paul Hartunian. Yeah, he's open to the joint ventures.
Oh, yeah. Not to steal the line. Well, I guess I'm stealing the line from Jay, where he said if you were to take any of his business strategies away except one, it would be the joint ventures. Before, when I first read that 10 years ago, I didn't understand it or didn't agree with it, but now I do, because I have joint ventures now in the works where these are huge. I mean, all it takes is one half of a half of a percent of these people to say, okay, we're interested, or we'll buy, or we'll go to your seminar, or we'll do whatever it is you're offering, versus me trying to put the manpower, the money, and trying to reach them all individually. So joint venture really shortens your learning curve.
Yeah, it's definitely the way to go. And I don't know why people don't focus on it more. I mean, that's all I should be doing is just joint ventures.
It's the same thing with PR. I don't understand why people don't incorporate that. I've been an entrepreneur 8 times. The only person that's been in there more than me over the last 6 years is Robert Kiyosaki, and that's Rich Dad Poor Dad. So that's the kind of company I'm in. Do you know what it's like to have 10 million of your hardcore business people reading about you, to have 10 million people see you an entrepreneur, then you're going to have a short few where, you know what, I need PR. Let me call this guy. They call me. I don't call and seek them out. I'm not sending postcards. No, I do that stuff. I follow J. Abraham's philosophy of the Parthenon, but it's much easier to have somebody call you, like with the CNBC thing. Hey, we read about you. Here's what I'm doing. Here's what I'm trying to do. Got an appointment in 2 hours from a guy who saw me and called me in the financial services industry. I closed him today. That's all because of that article.
Yeah, it's all positioning. That's great. All right, look, you were so excited when you got your first million-dollar client. So tell me that story. What does a million-dollar client look like? What does that mean for you? Why are you so excited about that now?
Okay, and the way I got him, I spoke at an event, J. Abraham's event. He was a great prospect because everybody paid $5,000 to be there. Jay kind of set the tone saying, okay, come in tomorrow morning. We got a PR expert going to show you guys how to get $100,000 in free publicity in the next 6 months. Have me stand up, wave, and all that good stuff. So the next morning, I get ready to go on stage, and the guy pulls me aside, and he says, you know, I'm interested in learning about this PR stuff, especially TV and radio for free. That excites me. I got a $10 million business at the time.
Okay, so this was your first million-dollar client?
No, this is where I met the guy.
Oh, where you met him. Okay, so you met him. And was he an attendee or a speaker?
He was an attendee, and he hired me before I ever went on stage. He said, I want to do some work with you. I know I need it. And I said, you know what, once I get off stage, I'm going to be flocked, and I can't take on 15, 20 clients. I learned that the hard way. You know, at that time, I had been speaking for a while, so I told him, I'm like, I'm going to get flooded. You know, I'm $1,000 a month, $3,000 up front. He ripped out his checkbook, wrote me a check, handed it to me, then I went on stage and talked about how to get PR. Mm-hmm. That was my first introduction to him. And I did work for him off and on. He recently raised funding to grow his company, and he had a $1 million budget. If you add up everything I've made besides him, I've made well over $1 million. I mean, it's, you know, you make $300,000 a year for 4 years. That's 1.2 million, you know, so that's easy to do. But he was the first one where it was $1 million solely from him. And the way that works is there's the PR side of it. There's some television stuff he wants to do, you know, some other branding. So it's more all-inclusive, more of a marketing campaign.
So he's got $1 million to put into PR.
Yeah, that's his budget. Right?
That's his budget. So he signed on with you. You're on a retainer with him?
Yeah, that's for the entire year.
Is he spending it with you?
With me.
Are you going to make $1 million in gross income from him?
No, because part of that has to go to my expenses to do the marketing.
But he's investing $1 million in PR with you.
Yeah.
And whatever's left over after your expenses and marketing, your outsourcing, you keep.
Right. And I've been doing this 14, 15 years to tell you my profit margin.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. Oh, it's huge, I'm sure. I mean, you got Filipinos making phone calls at $3 an hour.
And I just got a client today. Well, actually, they got in USA Today yesterday, and I talked to her today for the second half of the payment. You know what that was, Mike? That was 2 emails to the reporter at USA Today.
What kind of client? What are they selling?
They're in how to improve customer service for corporations. You heard the story where they said the plumber comes over and he taps around something and hands you a bill for $250 for 10 minutes worth of work, and then they're complaining.
You're only here for 2 minutes.
And he was like, yeah, well, it was 50 for me actually hitting the nail. The other 200 is I knew where the nail was, or I knew however it goes.
Yeah, exactly. I know that story. It's the knowledge. It's the experience. It's knowing where to go to get the PR. A lot's changed with the internet and the different media channels and tons of cable stations and digital TV that you can fast forward through commercials. Have you seen it produce results just as well as it's always done when you do it your way?
You know, I can't speak for a traditional PR firm, but I never did anything the traditional way anyway. So for me, it kind of all balances itself out, meaning we all know there are news outlets that have went under. We all know those are downsized. They don't have as many people. They don't have the staff, but they still put out a paper every day. Their magazines that went under, and then there are new magazines that come out, so that's a revolving door. What I am finding with the TV news networks, Fox and CNBC and CNN, all those guys, is the staff is much shorter and much leaner than what they used to be, so they're aren't as many people to pitch and talk to. So now the few people who are there are getting 3 times the amount of pitches and talking to 3 times as many people as they used to. But that offsets upset because the shiny new object syndrome, now people are going through Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and doing all this other stuff. Very rare are they picking up the phone, calling the reporter. Very rare are they sticking with emails or sending faxes. I still fax press releases, if you believe that.
I was going to ask you. I'm a small business. I got this new widget. I want to do some PR. I bought your course, and I want to implement some of the things I've learned. Should I be faxing these days, or is email going to be just as well? Does it matter how they get the press release these days?
I would say this. If you have a relationship with a reporter or someone in the media, then I'm all for an email because they'll recognize the email. Just think about when you get emails from people you don't recognize or don't know. So they're the same way, but it's on a heightened scale because they're in the media, so everybody's sending them something. So if I already have that relationship, I'll email them. But I still fax.
So people still have fax machines?
They do. Remember, you're not faxing an individual. You're faxing a newsroom. So what happens is there's a newsroom, and then there's a fax machine right there, and it comes right there in the newsroom, and somebody has to read it. When you send an email, you don't know if anybody reads that or not. You know, with a fax, you have to pick it up and look at it, and that's when, you know, you get into your copywriting. You want a good headline. You want a good story. But then that is actually read and looked at. So I kid you not, I still fax stuff to the media.
Right, so if I want a good list of newsrooms, fax numbers that are up to date and relevant. I know Hartoonian used to sell a list, but is that thing updated? Where can one get a good, reliable list of fax numbers if they want to do some press release faxing?
Use Fiverr. You can pay $5. I bought a couple of lists from there. It includes everything, the contact person, the phone number, the address, the email, the fax number, the topic that they write about.
$5 for that list off Fiverr?
Yeah.
I just used Fiverr for someone to create a logo for me. Tell me, what are some of the other things you've used Fiverr for?
I use Fiverr for, I buy mailing lists. I bought a list of 1,000 new businesses. That was $5. I used to go through InfoUSA and pay $600 for the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had someone create a logo before. I tried outsourcing, like with the phone calls, because there are people that do telemarketing. It depends. I'll play around with that. The outsourcers I have in the Philippines, you know, they send all my emails and do all my internet research. But anything that has to do with design, I'll go through Fiverr. You know, it's $5. You know, you might get a dud here and there. You know, you might be out $5. But the mailing list that I got, I use it today. It works. She's a publicist in L.A., and this is her list.
Wow, that's great. How old are your kids now?
12, 14, 16, and 18.
What's your work setup look like? You got an outside office?
I used to, and then my secretary had a stroke, and I just never went back and went through all of that. And so I work out of my home, got salespeople all commissioned, and I generate leads and pass the leads on to them.
How do you use salespeople? What are you using salespeople for?
Wow, I don't know if I can give away mine.
All right, just give me a little bit of it. You learned this from Chet.
I actually got this from John Carlton. Believe it or not. Okay, this is in a nutshell what happened. He did invent a hot seat here in Chicago. This is where I am, so I definitely had to come. And while he's doing the hot seat, there was a guy sitting next to me that was a dog trainer, dog groomer, or whatever. And then when John was diagnosing this guy, he said, you know what? What would be great is, he was like, Robert, what if you could tell him such and such media outlet is doing a story on dog training? You found that out. And then you told him about it, and then got him to pay you to get him on that show. Before, I had never approached PR that way. I was doing it the way everybody else was doing it, and that's try to get a client and then hustle to try to get him a story. So now what I do is I line the story up first. So, for example, I'll go to Dr. Phil's site and see he's doing a help my marriage is in trouble type story. So I'll call or email or Facebook or send postcards to 1,000 relationship experts and ask who wants to be on Dr. Phil.
And then the ones who raise their hand, you'll get them as a client.
Those are my salespeople follow up with.
Oh, your salespeople will follow up with them to sell them your PR package.
Yeah, I generate probably 40 leads a day of people saying, I'm interested, I want to be interviewed. And so I can't call all these people back.
All right, so you'll get a direct mail list of, say, relationship experts. You'll do physical mailing, direct mail?
I do postcards. I do phone call, telemarketing.
You pop it out in the mail. Calls come in, and you've got some salespeople that you've hired to handle the calls, and they get a percentage of the deal.
Yep, that's it.
Oh, Robert, that's beautiful, man. And you're getting a good amount of client work this way.
Oh, yeah. The only thing with me is, and this is why I kind of tried the Fiverr route a little bit, was finding good salespeople, because even though the system works, you still got to understand sales. I mean, just because someone says I'm a marriage expert for 20 years and I can help couples, Dr. Phil's looking for a relationship expert, that doesn't mean they're just going to lay down and give you the credit card. No, you still need sales. That's the problem I'm having, but I've been using that strategy primarily since John Carlton said it.
So you know they're doing the story. It's no guarantee you're going to get that client on, but they'll hire you in a good chance to try and get on.
Because, one, we know that they're covering that story. Then it becomes a beauty contest. You know, like I said earlier, they have two or three other experts to choose from. You know, maybe you all get on, maybe they choose one. And then in some cases, they don't have anybody else responding to it, so they end up going with you. Oh, this is another thing, too, I forgot to share. Another way I kind of put the odds in my favor when it comes to PR, I buy remnant ad space. Let's say you hire me, like, okay, I want to be in the San Diego Tribune, and I'm trying everything to get you in there. Like, you know, they won't run an article. I'll just buy it and rent this space for $60.
Now, what was that? There's a website that sells remnant space. What's a good resource?
You know, I use Access to Media. If you go to accesstomedia.com and just have them send you over like a newspaper rate sheet. And this is how I promote my seminars. Like in the Chicago area, I can get in all of the newspapers. A quarter page ad is $60.
That's it?
That's it.
Is that remnant price?
Yeah, that's the remnant.
Now, what would you pay for that full rate card?
$3,300.
So are they publishing the remnant space price?
No. That's just to me as an ad agency, as a marketing person.
Oh, as a marketing person, you're able to acquire that remnant space. Could anyone like myself get it at that price?
Just go to Access to Media. The rep I deal with, her name is Jennifer, but if you just email, I guess, the general email and say I'm interested in your rate sheet, they'll send you over the latest one.
They can't guarantee you where you're going to be.
Yeah, they can too, because remnant is not PR. Is advertising.
Even with remnant price, they'll tell you where you're going to be in the publication?
Oh, okay. I thought you meant in which paper. No, because what happens is the newspaper decides that depending on space. You know, a lot of times they sell this remnant in standby because they didn't sell all the advertising. So instead of having to go to press with the public service announcement or to throw in some dumb article, at least they can make something for it. But for $60, I mean, who cares where you are? That's my take on it. And I hedge my bet because I'll put an ad in three or four of the local papers.
So when you're promoting a seminar, give me an example of what you bought, how much you spent on the remnant space, and what kind of results you got.
Okay, I'll give you two examples. One where it was successful, the other one where it flopped. Well, you're not from Chicago, but, you know, we have all these suburbs. I typically stay with the Northwest. I mean, even there, it's a million people, just those dozen suburbs. So I'll get a list of those newspapers, do the remnant, I'll write like a press release, and that's an advertorial, and I'm sure you got some of that on your site, you know, when you're writing ads, how to make it look like an advertorial so it looks like an article in the newspaper. So I had one where I paid, one was $60, the other one was $88. I had 12 people show up. It was just like a little small mastermind type group. They each paid $100 to be there, and then I ended up selling one of the guys a $5,000 package. So that was worth a little over $5,000 for the $140 I put in. The other way I use it is I'll do these remnant advertising to promote my seminar, and if nobody shows up, what am I out? $120.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. That's great. So you always go with the advertorial. You've found the advertorial is the best.
I do both. I always send out a press release, but you can't guarantee that, especially when you're promoting an event. I mean, you can put the best spin on it. You can try as hard as you want, but you can't guarantee that they're going to come out right up your event. So I'll do the remnant space, and it looks like an article. I know how to put ads in there. There's no way you can tell that it's not an article. So I'll do both. You know, if we get the PR, great. But, you know, I'm not going to take any chances and hope some media outlet writes about it. These kind of clients are paying me money for exposure, and that's what I give them. And I do the same thing on television, too. Like, this is a whole other conversation, but there's something that's called lease access, not local access. Local access is free if you're a taxpayer in that city for that cable company. Lease access is advertising on that same channel, but you can advertise in any city in the country. Like, I can advertise in L.A. for $100 for 30 minutes. I can do here in Chicago, it's $65 for a 30-minute show. If you go up north in Wisconsin, it's $15 for a 30-minute show. So they give you 30 minutes of airtime, and it's government mandated, so they can't give you the corporate competitive rate card. But the downside is whatever your local access channel is, it's going to be on there. But you develop the content, you produce it, so you can do a top quality production and hand it to them, and they'll air it. I think San Diego is about $65, $70 range.
So I could produce my own 30-minute show, approach them through a lease access deal, and have that show air on the public local access station.
And that's another way I promote my seminars. Like I did one in Indianapolis where I got the airtime, had my 30-minute piece run. If nobody calls or signs up or registers, guess what? I don't go to Indianapolis. I didn't pay for airfare. I didn't buy a hotel. I didn't do all this other stuff. I guess I got the Jay Abraham brain out. Reverse engineer everything. Most people say, okay, I'm going to do a seminar here. They pick the location, the venue. They go through all this stuff, and then they try to find people to sell it to. I try to find people to sell it to first.
I would think there'd be like a line of people trying to get their media on the channel.
They don't know about it.
Who handles this lease access advertising?
Go through the advertising department. Like here is Comcast, RCN. I don't know, your listeners live in different cities. So they would just call whoever their local cable company is, call the advertising department and just say, hey, I'm interested in your lease access rate. And then they'll give you that. And then you want to understand how it works. You have to provide the show, the content, which is easy to do because I record it, put it on DVD, take it down to the station. Got my call to action, got everything. I'm coming to your town February 8th through the 9th. Seminar, blah, 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 blah. Go to this website or call this 800 number to sign up. I run it two or three times and nobody calls. Okay, well, I'm not going to Indianapolis. So I'm not going to Des Moines. Well, I'm not going to Riverside.
Beautiful. All right, those are two very powerful techniques for getting advertising at a super discounted rate. You've given me three incredible resources. Fiverr for getting great targeted mailing lists for only $5. Lease Access, where you can produce a 30-minute show and get on for under $100 on your local lease access station. And then the remnant space, and you gave me a resource to find remnant space. Any other great resources for saving a ton of money on advertising?
Yeah, and I got this from Gary Halbert, just a co-op mailing. At one point, I was doing maybe 5,000 pieces of direct mail a month, and I didn't pay for anything. And the way you do this is, it works similar to a joint venture in a sense you want to target businesses that kind of sell to the same customer, but they're not competing. So when I go down my rundown of how I look for a joint venture partner, where do people go and what do they need before they do business with me, while they're doing business with me, and after. So I did that, and then I would go to companies who sold something to the same type of client, but something different. And I say, I'm doing a 5,000-piece mailing, and you'll get the mailing list, you'll get the name, the address, the where it's going, you get all of that stuff. It's going first class. All you have to do is $800 for you to be a part of it. There's no way you can mail 5,000 pieces for $800. The postage alone is more than that. So they saw the value in that. So I would get five other companies and give them that same offer. So I had five businesses paying me $800 to be in this kind of like a Val Pack, direct mail package. Then I just print off my own sales letter and put it in there with them. So they paid for postage, the mailing list, printing. All that was built into the $800 that they paid.
All right, give our listeners, you got new guys who just got the marketing bug, just like you were amazed at what Jay Abraham was saying, the same way I discovered Jay Abraham, your story and my story are very similar. There's still people out there discovering marketing for the first time. What advice would you give to these guys who are new to the marketing game and just learning about this game before we end the call?
Sure. The old me or younger me, however you want to say it, would have said, get books, go to the library. If you can't buy all these marketing books, do research on the internet, then that's great as far as learning about marketing. But me now, fast forward, I would say to grow your business, not so much the marketing. Now, you should put some time in that, maybe 20% of your time, but mastermind. Find people who are already successful. And I think partner might be too premature of a word, but at least hang around them. And again, that's me having been in business 14 years and saw where the biggest increases came. It didn't come from my marketing. Now, I do understand marketing is powerful, but you've heard the saying where they say your income is about as average as your five closest friends, you're about as healthy as the five people you hang around. So if you're trying to get to that six-figure, seven-figure, eight-figure mark, then find ways to associate and be around those people. Because only one or two things are going to happen. They're going to either pull you up or you're going to pull them down. And I can almost guarantee if you hung around Jay Abraham or Bill Bartman, you're not pulling them down to $100,000 a year. So the only thing that can happen is they'll pull you up through their knowledge, their wisdom, their network, their contacts. They all know people who are just as successful. I would go to events. You can go to seminars. You can go to mastermind groups, Chamber of Commerce. They have influential people. You just want to be around those people and get to know them. Ask them to lunch. If you play golf, play around the golf with them. Because so many deals are done on the friendship level. I mean, we kind of touched a little bit with the joint ventures, but all these high-profile clients I get, not one time did I put in a proposal. Not one time did I compete with another PR person. It was, okay, he's in our circle. He does PR for me. Here's what he did. Let you know I'm doing work for somebody else. So my final thought is that can be a proactive strategy. Anybody who's new to business, anyone who's new to marketing, study the marketing. Devour it, but at the same time, get out of your comfort zone. If you can't afford to go to these seminars, one thing you can do, which I've learned, especially the ones that are $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 a person, you can volunteer. They need people to set up chairs, pass out information. You can attend the seminar for free by volunteering, and they all do it. Robbins, Harvecker, that's a secret most people don't know. Dan Kennedy, you can volunteer. And you're in there with these people. What you do on your free time is what you do. So you can network. You can pass out business cards. You can get in that way.
That's great advice. Robert, it's been a fascinating story from the beginning days to your first $1 million client. I've milked some incredible information out, some valuable information that I'm going to personally use and that the listeners can use. And I really appreciate you sharing so generously with myself and my listeners. I really do.
I'm glad that I did reach out to you and you responded. It was a great interview. I know I'm not the same person I was 10 years ago. I guess we all have grown. But, you know, just happy to share. Hopefully people can get something from it. You know, don't try to overwhelm yourself. And if you feel there's 10 nuggets in here, don't try to just eat all 10. Take one or two that you can do. And then after you master that or you're doing that on a regular basis, come back to the interview and add another one. That way it sticks. Another thing I learned from Ted Holmes anyway, that way it sticks. And then next thing you know, you're growing and you're growing and you're growing. And this can be done by anybody.
We'll be in touch soon. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, man. Have a good day. Bye-bye. For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com.